Hi, Jamie. Hey, Simona. Hi, Christina. Hi, Ray. Hi, Linda.
Hey Ray, I have something for you in the chat, real quick.
Okay, hi.
Hi, thank you.
We are gonna look at creating accountability today. But before we do, a couple of housekeeping pieces. The first is, I feel like we haven't spoken about certification in a little bit. We spoke about it way back in the beginning, but we are we're getting close to the end. And so I'm gonna just share a little bit again. You already have all of the information, but just share a little bit again for those of you that are considering certification. So the first is you don't have to do certification. It's not like I am better if I do. It's really a question of, is it right for me? Is it gonna be helpful for me? Is it gonna be valuable for me to go through the full process and to get certified? And for some people, it is a opportunity to know that you were more rigorous and I don't know how to put it, to like that if some people like I like to get certifications, right? Like they can be validating, all of that. So if you are that type of person, that's awesome. But if it's not going to be meaningful or valuable for you, know that about yourself too. If you sense that you're going to go for certification, hopefully you've been working on it already. All of the certification requirements are in your member center. I'm not going to go through all of them again because we already have together. I won't go through all of them again today, but there are a couple of pieces that I want to point out. The first is, and I'm not supposed to say this, and my team, I never appreciates when I say this, but it is the truth and it is helpful, so I am going to say this and tell you. We take the due date for submitting materials very, very, very seriously and like ask that you please, please, please submit by the due date. However, this is the part my team doesn't like me saying. If you need a little bit of an extension, we can make that happen too. Sometimes some people are just like done, and then within 3 weeks of the program ending, they've submitted all of their materials. And for other people, you just need a little bit more time to gather things together. Maybe you have something happening in your life. I really want to make space for that and be flexible for that. So if you think that you need like a month-long extension, usually a month is kind of the max on that, just let us know. Don't not do certification if you really want to, but you just need a couple of extra weeks. The team will figure it out administratively, and we'll be there for you on that. So that's the first piece I wanted to mention. The second piece I wanted to mention is the recording of a session that you'll be submitting. Usually it helps to tell people I'm not the person that's listening because sometimes people are nervous about that. I am not going to listen to any of the recordings. A team member in Ball does. A couple things I want to say about the submission of the recording. I don't have it up in front of me, but we have the guidelines on the certification page in your member center. However long we say, I think it's, I can't remember the amount of minutes now, and I'm sorry. Don't submit a longer recording if the last 5 minutes of that recording after the cutoff time is really important for us to hear. Involve will stop listening within about a minute of whatever the cutoff time is. We just need to do that for, administrative purposes and time management and all of that. Before we used to be strict with it, people would submit 45 minutes, etc. So if you know that, it's okay if your session is longer than the allotted amount of time, but if you know that there's an important piece that you want us to listen to, specify start at this time, end at this time, etc. The other thing I want to just share about the recording is that we're rigorous about checking, assessing the competencies on it. The main competencies that we check are energetics and container creation, listening skills, creating awareness skills, breakthrough questioning skills, visioning and strategizing skills. You're not required to do a befriend your fear or a wheel of self-sabotage or rewiring negative thought patterns, etc. The reason is because, as we know, coaching is not a formula. You can't manufacture it, and so we know the competencies that we can check for are the ones that I just mentioned. Of course, feel free to use any of the other skills. We're rigorous and we're rigorous for you because if you're applying for certification, you're applying for a specific reason, and we want you to know that when you get that certification, that you have mastery in those skills. That's part of the reason for doing the certification piece of it, so that you can feel like, I know I can go out there and I have these skills mastered. And so, what does this mean? It means that sometimes people don't pass the first time they submit. Sometimes people don't pass the first time they submit. If this happens, there is nothing wrong, and there is nothing wrong with you. And it doesn't mean that you are not a masterful practitioner. It doesn't mean anything about you. The only thing it means is that on that particular recording, on that particular day, not all of the competencies were fully met. That's all it means. If that happens, we will let you know which skills to work on. We'll give you some direction on that, and then you have time to resubmit. And we're happy for you to resubmit, and we want you to resubmit. And I promise you, you will pass on the second pass. We will give you all the support that you need for that. I think those are the pieces that I wanted to just pull out about certification for now. Yeah, Simona.
This is just a technical editing question about the video. I also forget what the number is. I think if it was 10, whatever the number is on the website. Would it be okay if we edit the video so we can say like this is like, and maybe like do like a bumper, like here's what's happening right now, so that way it can highlight the skills that we can, like you can see like the beginning, like the intentions, and then maybe if a conversation's personal or it's not personal, but like sometimes, because I had an idea, I'm either gonna do this with my trading partner, which would be amazing, or I was gonna reach out almost as a marketing piece to like my broader non-client list, which I only have a very small handful of clients, so that's gonna be really easy. And just say like, does anyone want to step in? And so that way they know they're stepping in to volunteer. And so thinking about who may step in, like not everyone's gonna want all of their whole experience to be shared, but there might be, if I could edit like and say, here's, I was just trying to think through the logic.
Yeah. So a couple of things on that. I'm pausing because we've not done that before, and it's like there's a part of me that wants to say I think my concern. I'm not closed off to the idea. I may have to just think about it. I'll just say like my concern is because Inval is really listening to like what is the client saying, and then how is the coach listening, creating awareness, and like doing all the things based on what they're saying. So if you cut pieces out, it might stunt her ability to really see how you're listening. I need to talk to her about that too. So I'm not, I'll get
I'm
back.
hearing you, and I wanted to bring, yeah, I got
But
it.
here what I will say is this is completely confidential. We don't even discuss it amongst the team. Inval listens, and then we get rid, like we delete the recording. We keep no record of it. And by law and contract with you, we're not allowed to share it or details in any way. So if it helps for whoever the client is going to be to really hear that, to hear that only one person in the organization is listening, tops two. I've never. Because I never have come in to listen, but outside chance, Inval is like, hey, and that it's completely confidential and that we delete it. You may just need to take on a client that is
Willing for
okay with
that.
this.
And it's totally open to have our trading partners be our coaching people if that's the safe, safest, most confidential space for all our people.
Thank
Sweet.
you.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Kim, yes. So it doesn't have to be a full coaching session in the time, but you want to make sure that you're demonstrating each of those skills that I shared in that time. Any other cues on this for right now? No? Okay. If any come up, please let me know. We're here to support you in any way possible. If you want to be certified, I want you to be certified. So support in any way. You have the course content for life. So I'm not one of those people that's like the course is done and you don't get it anymore. You have when I say life, I mean so long as my business is around and I can keep the membership center up, which I plan on it being for a very long time. Please, please. So yeah. Okay, great. The other quick piece that I wanted to mention, I don't know if the email went out yet. If it didn't, it will go out soon. On March 28th, from 3 to 4 Eastern, we're gonna have a next steps call. And in that time, I'm going to share with you a couple of options for continuing the work that we've started together, if that's something that you would like to do. My team, I'll take response. In error, we, as many of you know, a few months ago sent out that email about stepping in to advance. You weren't supposed to get it. But in this call, I'll be sharing more in detail about advanced depth, and I'll also be sharing about if you're not ready for new material, an opportunity to drill down and integrate everything that we have learned in sacred depths as well, and to get some coaching from me and all of that. So I think you all know it's there's so many favorite things about my work and my business, but my favoritist thing is to be able to go deeper and hold space ongoing for people that feel really resonant with the work and want to go deeper. I'm a relationships person. So if you are called to learn more, please come on the 28th and we'll send an email out about that. All right. Last piece before our content for today. I'd love to hear from one or two of you. What's been percolating and resonating, or what do you want to celebrate about either the wheel, getting off the wheel for yourself or clients, or myth of perfection for yourself or your clients? What have you been seeing, noticing? What's coming together? I'd love to hear voices. Yeah, Simona.
Hi, everyone. I do have something I'm excited to share, but I also wanted to pause because I often raise my hand. So if there's someone else who's quieter, I want to give a second to say you want to raise your hand.
It's all good. We have
Oh.
space for more than one share.
Okay. Well, then my share is I want to, it's really like a high energy feeling right now. And I just am crediting just the Sacred Depths community and all the different supports that have come in different moments. But I had some, well, I had something. Oh, I'll just tell a whole long story. Is that like the whole reason that I joined Sacred Depths was because I wanted to become a therapist. And so before I went to academic, like the halls of academia, I wanted to have a feminine foundation to everything I was learning so that like I just feel like that's really important. And I didn't, I had my own personal weirdness around coaching. And I know that sounds really weird to say to a group of coaches, but I just didn't believe in coaching. I just didn't get it. I just knew as, and I didn't even know Joanna or her work. I like stumbled upon her website and I was like, this is my teacher. This is who I need to learn from. This feels very feminine, very sacred, very resonant with my being. And this is the foundation I want to have underneath the therapy education I'm going to get in academia. So all this to say, I stepped in, I did all these amazing trades with everybody. I applied to grad school. And then I had this very weird experience. And I picked a specific grad school because of the value, I could afford it, blah, blah, blah. And it was a very weird experience. Like it was three interviews, and the first two went really well. And in the third one, I could feel the person see me. And like I could see him see my background, and I could feel he had some, money stuff. And an old me would have been like, I don't, and then it came out in the call something about, oh, those millionaire people. And I'm like, wow, you're mischaracterizing me entirely. Cause most of you remember like my background, that this is faux. So like anyhow, an old me would have been like really bananas about being mischaracterized. Like I just would have been like, that's not fair, and you're mischaracterizing me. But current me was just like, just be centered and grounded in who you are, and that's their stuff, and your stuff's your stuff, and we'll see how this unfolds. Just stay grounded in who you are. And how it unfolded is I did not get in, and a part of me still says, screw you, and gives the giant finger to that person, and like, do your work, people, mom, dude, all of you, do your work. Don't let your stuff impact me. But the gift in that was like, wow, like I got to look at all so many things like being powerless, but I was like, that is a block to a path, not the path. And then I got to see like, oh my God, like I wouldn't have done 50 coaching trades to realize like coaching is amazing and my life has changed because of it. And I was able to sit in that mischaracterized experience and not get triggered because
of the amazing people I've coached with. And I'm like, I actually think that I want to be a coach. And I know that I can still apply to other schools and pursue that if I choose and want to. But I was like, I might not actually want to. And maybe just the idea of becoming a therapist was what brought me to this. And so all to say, like, that's a long ass story. All to say, like a noticing of the trust in the process, and where this ties all the way back, which will be a much shorter story, is I had a giant injury in the beginning of the year, and it slowed down my plan for how I wanted this year to unfold. And I wanted to do a remothering masterclass around Mother's Day. And because I was injured as severely as I was, everything got backed up, and I was about to power through it. And I was like, what if I just trust in the divine unfolding? And the divine unfolding, as I keep saying, I want to trust in it, and I try to, but I'm like, this just showed me really clearly how important it is. And so I was like, what if I just relax into this experience of the masterclass in a way that's feminine and flow and trusting? And what does it look like? And it started to unfold in a new way that feels even better than the original vision that I had for it, because I just relaxed into it. So I guess myth of perfection, trusting in the process, trusting in coaching, appreciating the container. And that's a long story, but, oh, and I'm a grandma now. My grandma name is Grandmona. So that's a lot of things.
I love it. I love all of the learnings and the dispelling of myth of perfection. And you could have easily gotten on the wheel and you didn't. And that's huge too. And it's not weird to have weird feelings about being a coach. Rebecca.
Hi. I have a question about working with the myth of perfection. So I did the 5-day challenge, even though nevertheless, and my beautiful coaching partner, Jenna, and I were talking a little bit about what that experience was like. And my experience was it brought up a lot. And I think that's the point. And as someone that really appreciates integrating that level of work, right? Like, it's a lot of work to do that for 5 days, and a lot comes up, and how to ground it. So I feel really curious about what you've seen as ways that are helpful to ground all that comes through in a process like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's such a great question. And I think I'm going to ask the question back to you first. So when you think about your experience, if you were the coach, and you were the coach because you were coaching yourself, what did you do, or what could you have done to ground the process?
Yeah. It was the one area where I realized that I needed to be more hand-holdy. And what I mean by hand-holdy is I am generally more of like a hands-off, like do the work, integrate the work, like allow your self-care practices to hold you. But with this, I really felt like it was helpful for me, I realized I needed more hand-holding. So having the coaching session with Jenna was really helpful to just share about my experience. And I'm preparing to guide a friend through two sessions around this. And I learned this is one area where I have to be hand-holdy and check in. And like, it framed my pre-session questions, just being like, hey, this work can bring a lot of stuff up, and we love that it does that. If it's in your awareness, then you can work with it. And then just realizing that when I give her that particular piece, that I'll be more hand-holdy as a coach, where I'll actually like send an email and be like, hey, how are you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I love it because it intersects with some things we're going to look at today. Tighter container, right? Like tight container in the beginning, pre-qualifying a little bit. And I would say this can bring up a lot. Don't set it up as this does bring a lot up a lot, because if it happens to not for the client. You don't want them to feel like they did it wrong or not good enough or they're not getting what they need. Because sometimes it is just you do the process, right? So pre-qualifying, holding that tighter container during the time that they're doing it, sending in a check-in email or two, and then following up. Don't just jump maybe into the next session, new thing, but spend some time in the beginning of that next session looking at, okay, what came up, processing what needs to be processed.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah, great question. Thank you. Rana.
Hey, Joanna. So I want to preface what I'm going to share here with the fact that I haven't yet re-listened to that Wheel of Sabotage recording, which I definitely want to do, because there was just so much percolating for me there. And yet one of the things that I can't help start to wonder about, especially as I'm involved in conversations with right now a group of Indigenous women who are all business owners, about a particular branch of work that I do, is the power imbalances personally, organizationally, structurally, systemically, consequentially, and then of course, divine power, and how that relates to sabotage, self-sabotage, and also trauma stewardship. And some of the feedback that I'm receiving, not as it relates to me or my work in any way, but I'm just listening to these conversations, is that what I'm picking up on is that so much of the messaging from the, I'd say, professional development slash coaching industry is that this lands so much differently for bodies of color, and in particular with this group of women that I'm in conversation with right now. And trying to look at this, you know, from my personal level, in addition to potentially working with a group now, part of this feels incredibly exciting. You know, it's like, oh, what's the opportunity here? And it also feels incredibly layered and really challenging. But I can't help but continue to ask, like, what's the possibility here around this?
Yeah.
And I'm also hearing rumblings, you know, and I even have seen, I haven't gone down the rabbit hole with it, but I've seen these recent ads on Facebook, for example, about, there's one that I recently passed, you know, in the day about, it's not sabotage, it's trauma.
Yeah.
And so that's like,
Yeah. So yeah, it's such a good and important question and point.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me if this is helpful. Like we've been looking at and coming back to over and over again, and I made the specific point in Befriend Your Fear, but it's the same for all of these techniques. It's so important to check our filters first,
mm-hmm.
right? Because something, if our filters are unchecked, something that looks on the outside to be self-sabotage or looks on the outside to be an unreasonable fear, whatever it is, it may not be for your client's lived experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's one important piece is if you're going to work with a group, as you create curriculum and also as you teach them, for to have everybody check their filters, because unfortunately, even, you know, white people have colonial messaging inside of them, and people of color can also have colonial messaging and stuff, right? So for them to check their own filters too. Just this week, and if I can find it, I'll send it to you. I was listening to one of Brené Brown's podcasts, and she had these two women of color on who wrote an article for the Harvard Business Review. And the title was something like, "Don't Tell Me I Have Imposter Syndrome." And I think you'll really, you'll get a lot of value from this podcast, Rana. What they were saying is that, they didn't say the coaching industry specifically, but I guess just out there, whenever women and particularly women of color in organizations are told like, "Oh, you just have imposter syndrome." That's not true to lived experience when there are certain things happening, like you're saying, systemically or institutional wise, et cetera. So I think it's absolutely appropriate to work with Wheel of Sabotage or whatever it is with bodies of color, but both, there has to be this understanding that both the practitioner and everybody in the group is listening carefully, checking filters and sifting out, okay, what is mine to process? And what is not mine process. Is that helpful to think about some of that?
It's helpful to think about. And I think, you know, definitely re-listening to this call, but I just wanted to place it here in this space as we're also having conversations about decolonizing trauma work in general and how that impacts the work, if you will. And what are ways within my business or even within Sacred Depths and a program such as this to bring even deeper layers of awareness, you know, to these topics. And so I'm just sitting with all of this as it also relates to the power dynamics as well. And I just think it's important to just voice it for whatever that's worth.
Yeah.
And I'm wrestling with this myself too. So
no, I agree. And I so appreciate it. And I always, you know, as far as Sacred Depths and the techniques are concerned, I also always want to look deeper and find ways to get even more clear and precise around this in particular. So I'm so glad that you're bringing it up.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. All right. Well, feels like a lot is percolating. I'm happy to hear it. Let's talk about accountability. So, I always like to say accountability isn't sexy. it's not as sexy as befriend your fear and the wheel and all the things. But really, it's the sexiest of all. It seems not sexy, but it is the sexiest of all. Why? Because when we can be accountable, that's when things happen, right? So we've already looked a lot in this training at accountability, even if we haven't named it as such. So today we're going to be looking specifically through this lens of accountability, talk about some things we've already looked at, and then look at a bunch of other strategies for accountability as well. Let's start here. What is accountability? And I'll define it for our purposes for today. We'll look at it in this way. Accountability is taking action or following through on the inner and outer tasks that you've committed to. Taking action or following through on the inner and outer tasks that you've committed to. Not always, but often after a breakthrough or new awareness of some sort. All right, so that sounds easy enough, right? We said we're gonna do something and then we did it. No. um, we all know that being accountable to our commitments, whether it's to write a first newsletter or an edgy newsletter or have a hard conversation with a family member or start that or continue the meditation practice, start it, you know, whatever it is, we all know that being accountable to our commitments, even when we've had the sexiest breakthrough around it ever, can sometimes not be as easy as it sounds. Not just, and it's hard, not just because of fears, limiting patterns, thought patterns, etc., which we've looked at, but also because oftentimes the commitments that get articulated in a coaching session after a breakthrough or a new awareness requires your client to do something differently than they've done it before. Usually it requires us to do something differently than we've done it before, or else we wouldn't need coaching for it most of the time. And doing something different requires effort. Doing something different requires effort. And that's not just me saying it. We can just ask any neuroscientist and they'll tell you, and we know this from our rewiring, right? Doing something different literally requires effort. So what's a coach's role in client accountability? A coach's role or responsibility, I think there's two roles I think sacred depths coaches have in client accountability. The first one is obvious, supporting a client to be accountable to their goals, to their commitments that they've made with you in sessions. But there's a secondary role that I think we can play as well in the best of moments when it comes to accountability. And that's to use our coaching containers to support a client to learn how to become accountable. So, does that make sense? There's the actual accountability to action steps, but then there's the learning how to become accountable. Because for many people, learning how to be accountable is a becoming. It's a process of becoming and a learning how to build the muscle. Because we've got stuff around accountability. We're gonna look at some of that stuff today. Here's maybe the most important thing that I'm gonna say today. We can't make our clients do anything, period. End of story. Doesn't matter how masterful we are or how magical we are, and you are all very magical. Our client needs to want to do it. They need to want it, and it is their choice. And I share this with clients that I can't make them do anything as early as the sales process. It's part of the container and the energetics and the relationship that's set up. And just in case you have judged yourself for having a client that hasn't been accountable to their actions, I just want to let you know that I have had a couple of clients over the years who were not accountable. We looked at every fear, at every shadow, at every limiting belief, at every habit, at everything. I don't believe that I was doing anything wrong or that my clients were doing anything wrong. In their hearts, they either didn't really want it or they weren't really ready for it. Even for those clients, the work that we did together was still by and large a success and valuable in their eyes because they still transformed through the work that we did, just not in the ways that they originally thought they wanted to. They came to understand themselves better and know themselves better than before, to accept their different parts, etc. I've also had a fair share of clients who have become accountable and taken action and made beautiful progress towards their goals, but slowly, not right away, not overnight. Because some of the old habits had been ingrained since childhood, or because a major event happened in their life when we were working together that needed to be tended to, or because of a certain pace that they needed to go at. Going slower isn't a failure. It's called how real change sometimes happens for human beings. So I share all of this up front to invite you to throw away the notion that you're some kind of godlike figure that can will your clients into doing things, right? That's kind of related to myth of perfection, right? Just that doesn't serve. Of course, we want to use all of our tools to co-create accountability. We want to leave no stone unturned if that's what's needed. We want to be masterful. We want to support, but it ultimately isn't up to us. It truly ultimately isn't up to us. And I may have shared this with all of you before. I heard this saying once and it just really, really resonated with me. The way I think about it is I can help my clients figure out that there's a river. I can help my clients name the river. I can help my clients find the river and get to the river. I can help my clients figure out steps and strategies to cross the river. I can even, in some cases, many cases, hold my client's hand as they walk across the river. But what I cannot do is take a client on my back and carry them across the river. That is not only is it not possible, it is not helpful for anybody involved. Okay. Let me pause there. Anything that wants to be said so far in terms of what we've been looking at by way of accountability? What are you seeing? What are you hearing that's important for you so far? Jamie.
Yeah, the only thing I was just thinking about when you were talking about the slow versus fast is, now I'm going to have to go back and listen to when we talked about pace, like just our normal rhythms. Yeah. And, you know, I'm just thinking out loud if there are suggestions other than, I mean, now I'm more cognizant of wanting to understand the person I'm coaching with, their rhythm earlier than I have been, I think, in the past. So, so that's what I'm taking away from this. One of these accountable things is if I'm not matching up and not checking my own pace and filters reliably, then there could be a mismatch. Yeah,
absolutely. We run the risk of thinking that our client isn't being accountable if we're making an assumption that they have a particular natural pace and rhythm that's faster than their actual natural pace and rhythm. So the more that we can identify that early on, then the more we can co-create action steps and timelines for those action steps that are going to support the client in being accountable and not creating discouragement or shame or anything like that. Yeah. Karen.
I just really appreciated all that you said here. I have a client actually who has literally not followed through on probably a single action. She is so not accountable. And so I appreciate hearing that not all clients are accountable. We have, you know, we've had maybe 10 or 12 sessions. And we have turned it all over and under in every which way. And it can be really, I don't know what to do. I know it's don't take it personal, keep it in her, it's her stay in my box, watch my filters. And at the same time, it can feel discouraging. So if you have any tips on that.
Yes, the whole rest of the class will be inner and outer tips on it. But I'm glad that I normalized it for you. Yes. It's so, so important. And as we go through, you might be like, been there, done that, did that, did that, did that, did that, you know, or hopefully there'll be a couple of things that you haven't done that you can work on and, you know, try with this client. But if it comes to me that you're like, no, did all those things, then I think the next question is to have a conversation with that client and say, okay, you know, this is where we're at, and that's okay. That's more than okay. How is it that you really want to use our time together? You know, what is this work about for you? You know, and you can go from there.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you.
Rana's asking, can not being willing to be accountable also equate to not being coachable? It's such a great and question and a big conversation. And I want to make sure we get through everything for today, but I'd love to hear if people have thoughts in the chat on that. And then what I'll also say on that for right now is, this is one way you might think about it. If someone is not willing, right, there's a difference between willing to be accountable and able to be accountable. So that's a place to look. And then if they're not willing to be accountable, again, like I was sharing with Karen before, making that mean they're not coachable, maybe it's about looking again at what is the vision of this work together and what are the goals of this work. Nihal.
I just want to be brief. There's so much I could share, but what you shared just really opened up worlds of behind the scenes of practitioner burnout for me. Like the energetic of carrying people across the river is like so entrenched in my cells with my patients. And I'm just like, there's a lot of work in here for me. So thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, you're welcome. Simona.
I'm going to try and do this very quickly too, but I did want to say to everyone, and this isn't related to coaching because I didn't have a coach, but when I was pregnant with my daughter, so she's 19 now, I took a class, and it was just a class on creating a business around well-being. And at that time, single mom, sole provider, there was so much work I hadn't done. I knew I wasn't going to be stepping in to be a paid healer at that time. And I want to share with everyone that, like, again, back to what I shared earlier, just if we're trusting in the divine timing, like I felt called to take this class. It was like, you know, a week long retreat, you know, and also I was unwilling to have accountability around it because I knew it wasn't my time yet, but I knew that it was my time to take that class and plant that seed. So I share that in case it's helpful to anyone else, because now we are almost 20 years later, and now that seed is just tiny sprouts in front of you. So that's all.
I love that. Thank you. Yeah. Hema's saying in the chat feels like fear of change or moving forward. It can oftentimes be that for sure, which is why we want our befriend your fear tool, you know, all the tools we've been looking at. Okay, let's keep on going. We're going to look at outer strategies for accountability, but before we do, there's just some inner mindset and energetic pieces that I think are important to take a look at. Number one, when it comes to supporting clients to being accountable, don't make their results or their action taking about you. Don't make their results and their action taking about you, because then when you go to hold accountability, it's going to have a certain energy to it. Also, don't make their results and action taking for you. Don't make their results and action taking for you. I know this is obvious, but sometimes we do this without even realizing. Parents do both of these things. They can oftentimes make their children's results or doing certain things about them or for them. My child's accomplishment, that's about me, right? Or can you do this? Just get the A for me, right? Be nice to other kids for me. Or if the kid isn't nice to other kids, oh my gosh, that's about me, right? If you are making it about you or for you, clients will be able to feel this, like smell it a mile away. And if they have had this experience in other places in their life of someone making it about them or for them, it can trigger them either to rebel and vehemently not take the action, or to take the action but to people please, right? From a misaligned place. So we want to really watch our energetics on that. Some clients, and this is the other energetic piece that's important to think about, some clients can be triggered around accountability because they were shamed about accountability at some point, either from parents or teachers or employers or whatever it is. Oftentimes, in unintentional spaces and containers, accountability is set up as a power over structure or a punitive structure. Your job as a practitioner is to not only help hold clients accountable, but to help change their internal accountability structures from power over to empowered together. And to support them to build ownership in the actions that they want to take. So we wanna also, just in terms of energetics, make sure that we're checking any of our filters around accountability being a power over structure. Inner energetic pieces. Well, we spoke about accountability being measured based on the who, not on the what. Jamie brought that up in terms of internal pace. We also want to be conscious as always, of our filters when it comes to accountability. You might be a get it done gal or a get it done person, but your client isn't. You might get to things slower, but your client is a get it done person. Let me ask you a couple of questions on this. On a scale of 1 to 5, how accountable are you without outside help? And if it's helpful, you can break this down into different categories. So, like, I'm super accountable when it comes to responding to clients or students or, you know, anything that has to do with client care. I'm less as accountable when it has to do with creating marketing videos, or getting gifts for my kids' birthday parties that they're going to, right? Just because you're accountable in one area doesn't mean you're accountable in other areas. So without outside help, how accountable are you? Scale of 1 to 5, either in general or you can note a couple of different areas. And then does that shift at all when you bring outside help in? And when I say outside help, I mean friends that can help hold you accountable, practitioners, family members, reminders, alarms. There's so many apps these days. Does that shift for you? Ask a couple of other questions here to think about. Growing up, how were you held accountable to doing homework, to cleaning up, to practicing piano, to being kind, right? Whatever it was. So when you're growing up, how did others hold you accountable or not?
Joanna, could you please repeat that, the second point that you made?
The how accountable are you with outside help?
Nope, the one after that, please.
Oh, yeah. Growing up, how were you held accountable? Whether it was for doing homework or
cleaning. Right, I heard that, but I thought there was another one in between, but maybe I missed it.
Nope, it was just that.
Okay, thanks.
And then when you look at ways that you were held accountable, what worked and what didn't work? Yeah, and thanks, Simona, for putting those notes in the chat. I'm gonna let me cut and paste what I've got here too, all the details. So what worked and what didn't work in terms of ways that you were held accountable? It's amazing how much thinking about this topic can bring up for some of us. There's a lot in this for some of us. Kim, I'm going to ask one more question and then I want to hear your share or your question. And here's one last question. Whoever was holding you accountable, if you were held accountable, could you feel their motivations? So when I ask that, what I mean was their motivation because they needed you to reflect on them a certain way? Or because they were scared that if you didn't do X, something would happen? Or was their motivation because they just really, they knew you wanted it and they really wanted it for you? So yeah, I guess the question is, could you feel their motivations, and what were they? What were those motivations, and how did that feel inside of you, whatever the motivations were? All right, let's hear what some shares on this. What's coming up for you, Kim?
Yeah, I'm actually glad that you're asking this, because on one level, I have noticed this, like, not wanting to be in that role of accountability, but I've never really looked at what was pushing me to change accountability. And I think because I've been exploring all the permission and the consent and stuff like that, it started to feed. I'm also having these issues with accountability, the way that we get taught how to do it in coaching. But what came up for me as you asked the question, like, how were you growing up? What came through, and I'm kind of having trouble processing it, is that there was always this assumption I would fail at it. And so I'm now seeing, as I'm expressing this, that especially when it comes to, like, body stuff, there's always this pre-assumption that I'm going to fail at it. And because a lot of the accountability as I was growing up always had that punitive angle to it, that if I didn't do it right, if I didn't do it perfectly, I was going to be punished for that. In ways that didn't feel fair, that I have had this weird relationship with accountability where, depending on where it is, I'm either, like, the over obliger and wanting to please improve, or I'm in complete rebellion and not wanting to have anybody hold me. Like, I will actually avoid working with people because I don't want to get into that dynamic. It just creates those shame cycles.
Yeah.
So it's, I'm glad that you asked the question, because it might actually, like, I can feel myself in resistance to what my doctor is telling me I have to go do next. And it's like, even though it's supportive, even though I know it helps me, having this accountability piece will help me have a little more awareness of where I might self-sabotage because of those old cycles.
Yeah. I'm so glad that this is coming up for you. It's not easy to look at, but it's so important. And I can see how these awarenesses can really help you now when you go to rebel, or, you know, what, or be overly please, you're trying to please, or whatever it is, you can kind of bring it back to this awareness and then make the best choices for you. Good. Mindy.
Yes. I guess this applies, but it keeps running through my head is that I don't know if I know the difference between accountability and responsibility. Mm. And I think I sort of conflate the two, and I think maybe they're different. And for me, accountability was getting praise because I did what I was supposed to do or was expected of me, you know, sort of the good girl people pleasing. So I just thought that was interesting that the word responsibility kept coming up into my head.
That's such a beautiful distinction. And even just as you're talking, like part of what I'm hearing is that maybe for you, responsibility is about taking aligned ownership. Mm-hmm. You know, and semantics are different for everybody, but it sounds like for you, there's this like the accountability is like, I have to do it. Not necessarily because I want to, or I feel it's important, or, you know, whatever it is, whereas responsibility is I want to take ownership of this.
It sounds kind of right. It felt kind of important.
Yeah, I'm glad you're bringing it forward. I'm glad it's coming up.
Thank you.
Rebecca.
I'm sitting here with that question, the difference between the two. And I'm like, well, I don't know if I know anything anymore, but what came through for me is that I held myself accountable for a lot, many things that were beyond my capacity to hold as a young kid. And also that were like way, way beyond my years. And I can see how my rebellion to holding clients accountable brings some stuff up for me.
Yeah.
Because it's like I almost overheld myself accountable. And then for, you know, to kind of see the opposite of that, I can struggle with it.
Yeah. Yes. I'm so glad you're seeing that. And I don't say, yeah, a little bit calling yourself on that too, that can help you come to an aligned place for yourself, but also as you approach this idea of accountability with clients. It's almost like, if I'm hearing you correctly, it's like because of the pain and suffering that you endured for holding yourself over accountable, there's like a compensation with clients now on the other end of it a little bit.
Yeah, I think, yeah. Whether it's rebelling against it or overdoing it, like it's just, I'm not in right responsibility, right?
Relationship
with it. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. Good. Really good awareness. Okay. So I bring up all of these, as I always do, the inner pieces before the outer pieces, for two reasons. Number one, for our own energetics as practitioners, aside from just how we hold ourselves accountable in our lives, that's one reason, but also we want to really be intentional as we approach clients around this topic of accountability and be in right relationship with it. And also, it can sometimes be helpful to explore some of these questions that we just looked at around accountability with a client who is having trouble with accountability. So there are outer tools that we're gonna get to in a moment, but sometimes if we've like tried all the things, it's actually, and we've really worked on their fear about what the action is and all the things, it may actually be worth an exploration for them to look at their relationship with accountability. All right, let's keep on going. Okay, I'm gonna talk kind of fast. So, as I always divide things into different buckets, I've divided things into buckets again here. We've looked at the inner, and then the next bucket is preemptive accountability tools and structures. So we're going to look at accountability tools and structures to put in place before non-accountability even happens. And then after that, we'll look at accountability tools and structures for if action isn't happening. Because we want to already bake in accountability. Like, we don't want to wait for non-accountability to happen, right? We want to, like, bake in structures to begin with. And the best, one of the best ways that will help you bake in accountability preemptively is when you're creating the vision and the goals with the client. The vision and the goals and the action steps that you create with the client are oftentimes, the more we can match them to the client's needs, the more successful the client is going to be, right? So we looked already at an example of that with the different rhythms and paces, but I want to remind you of some other things we've already looked at in this program that really helps with this. Back to our visioning module. One thing that motivates accountability are goals that a client actually desires or needs. If the client doesn't actually desire or need the goal that they're going after, it is oftentimes harder to be accountable to it, right? So in that visioning of the goals, big goals or smaller goals, we want to ask questions, which we've already looked at, like, why is this important to you? What makes you happiest when you think about accomplishing this? Why is this a priority for you? We don't have to ask all of those questions, right? But we want to create those visions from that desire and need. Here's another thing that motivates accountability, the opposite of desire and need, pain, getting out of pain. So sometimes when we look at doing something new, creating a new habit or a new set of actions, asking questions like, why are you done with the old way of doing this? What will things be like if you don't move forward with these goals? As we've looked at, another motivator for accountability is building on strength, from strength to strength. When we try to move forward from a place of weakness, it's like we already aren't feeling good about ourselves. We're not sure that we can accomplish. We're only looking at what hasn't gone right. But at the beginning of a project, as we looked at all of these pieces in visioning, part of the visioning process is I like to ask a client, like, how do you know that you can do this? What have you done before? Or what resources do you have inside of you? Or what talents do you have? Or who can you ask that will let you know you will be successful here? Moving from strength and resource. And then as a part of that, we also looked at supporting a client to believe that they can and that it's doable. What are the resources that you have available to get this done? Why is this a perfect goal for you right now? Why do you know that you can do this? What will make this easier for you? What's the easiest path here, right, to get this done? Questions like that. We also know that for a lot of people, we looked at this as well, part of what motivates accountability is clarity on the task at hand, right? And so that's why, even though I know blueprinting can be hard until we get into the rhythm of it, that's why I'm a big believer in blueprinting, or if not blueprinting, breaking things down into small action steps or putting things on the calendar, etc. Less is always better for accountability. I shouldn't say always, but 98% of the time, less is better, right? How can a plan be simplified? How can we make it as doable as possible? Here's another thing that motivates accountability. Knowing that somebody else cares and is invested with you. In other words, your coach. Now, that's different than you're doing it for your coach or it's about your coach, right? But when we know that our practitioner really cares, that can support accountability. And that's an awesome structure to put in there, right? So when I say things, and some of you have heard me say this, even in group, you know, if I'm coaching someone, I'll say like, will you keep me posted, right? I wanna hear how this goes. That's one way of letting a client know that I care, that I'm invested in this with them. Will you let me know if you get off track? And not what, and sometimes I'll say to clients, like, don't tell me in 2 weeks if you're off track. Like if you're 2 days out and you're already off track, that's not too soon. Like, let me know, I will help you. I really wanna hear from you and I really wanna help you get back on track. It's no big deal if you get off track, totally normal. Let me know and we'll inspire you and motivate you to get back on, right? So, and part of that is also normalizing, like, right? And then, and we'll just make it happen and it's all good. Sometimes part of letting your client know that you care and that you're invested in it with them is proactively checking in between sessions to see how things are going. I won't do that all the time with every client. I will do that if I know a client is going to do something that is a little edgy for them or stretchy for them or, you know, pretty big for them or that they've had trouble with before. Here's another motivator of accountability. We looked at this one also. How do I want to say this? Setting the foundations or the environment to get things done. Don't, as a reminder, don't underestimate the environment. So when I say environment, I mean, where is your client's physical energy at? Do they have the time and the space for this? Do they have support from loved ones if they need it to be able to do this? You know, have they cleared their calendar if it's a bigger thing? Looking at what's the energy level that's required for this? How can you create the environment for that level of energy? Who in your family needs to be on board with this for you to be able to do this? A couple other things to think about doing preemptively. I like to have in my welcome packet a question around this. So how would you like for me to hold you accountable? And sometimes we may need to discuss that on a first session too, you know, but just asking a client straight up, like, what's the best way to hold you accountable? How would you like for me to hold you accountable? Having pre-call forms, there's many purposes to those forms, but one is to support clients in holding them accountable. For some clients, if they know that they have to like fill out a form before a session and in the form it says, what did you accomplish? You know, that's a surefire way for some people, not for everybody, to get some more things done that they said they were gonna get done. Sometimes if I've strategized with a client in a session and I have a sense it's gonna be like stretchy for them accountability wise, I'll ask them on the session, how can I help hold you accountable this week or over these next 2 weeks? What would feel really good for you? And I like asking what would feel really good for you around that, because it helps kind of take out some of those old like punitive or power over ideas for the client. Like, what would feel really good by way of accountability? Normalizing that a task might be difficult is also can help with accountability. If it's already normalized that it might be stretchy or a little bit difficult, then when a client goes to start to do it and it's a little stretchy or difficult, they may be a little less likely to take themselves out of the game and keep on going because you've normalized it. I'm sorry if I've shared this already. I may have already shared this today. If I did, I'm sorry. This is the second class I'm teaching today. I don't think it is. I think I shared it in the other class. I was listening to another Brené Brown podcast this week, mentioning her twice today. And she said something that I've never articulated in exactly this way, but I love it. She said, normalizing is the opposite of pathologizing. Normalizing is the opposite of pathologizing. And we talk so much about normalizing, you know, in this program, and I love that kind of added layer to it. Okay, I'm gonna go through and share the last bucket, and then we'll open up for cues after that. So the last bucket is accountability structures if a client has not been accountable, right? So the non-accountability has already happened. There are a bunch of things you can do. Work all your tools, right? With fears and obstacles and negative thought patterns, right? Any of those pieces, wheel of self-sabotage. As we said earlier, looking at an inner exploration around accountability for that client, like we did together today. Sometimes if there's been a bunch of accountability and you've looked at fears and obstacles and all of that, and it's still not happening, it might be time to ask the question, is X still aligned for you, right? Whatever the goal that the client visioned that they said they want, is that still aligned for you? Sometimes it's as simple as, this is so simple, but why didn't you get X done? You know, sometimes there's these deep, deep fears and obstacles, but other times there's an easy fix that the client didn't even realize. Like, oh, well, I just need to make sure I have ink in my printer, and then blah, blah, blah. Or I need to make sure when I go to the supermarket that I buy double the amount of quinoa, and then I'll be able to cook for the week, or, you know, like whatever it is. So sometimes it can be a simple thing. Do you want to adjust the task? Do you want to adjust the task? Sometimes if I know a client really wants it and they've been having trouble with accountability, I will, for a short period of time, hold an extremely tight container with them if they want. And so what that might look like is, for if they have something big that they're doing over the week, for each of those 5 days, I'll ask them to shoot me a quick email in the morning, what are you going to get done today, and then shoot me a quick email at the end of the day, what did you get done? And I'm going to let them know that they'll hear from, you know, if I don't hear from them, I'm going to check in with them. Sometimes just, you know, we don't want to do this ongoing because that doesn't teach accountability, you know, long-term, it doesn't like really teach accountability for a client, but if they just need to kind of get over a hump and get the win, you know, in order to move on, I will do, or create a new habit in the, you know, I will do a tighter container. It does take more energy from us as practitioners, so we also don't want to do it all the time for that purpose as well, but I'm happy to do it in the right moments when it's needed. Sometimes having inviting your client to get an accountability buddy can help. And I've sometimes matched up like two different private clients to be accountability buddies together. Sometimes asking, is there somebody in your house, if they live with somebody, you know, that can help hold you, can remind you to go to bed, you know, turn the computer off at 10, if, you know, that's the goal or whatever it is. Sometimes if it is something that is possible to actually do together while you're in session, that's something you can consider as well. You don't want to do this for every session, but every now and again, like if a client, let's say they're having trouble writing their first newsletter, we'll say, okay, our next session, I'm going to hold the space for you while you write, and you can bounce ideas off of me, and, you know, we're like, whatever it is, again, not to do forever, but just to get over that first hump. We may not even finish the whole newsletter, but if they get halfway through, then they're going and they're rolling. When I used to run or hold more like business building programs, I always had get it done days and get it done sessions in those programs, you know, in addition to training and coaching and all that, just time and space for us to come together as a group and get chunks of work done. Sometimes a reward can help. Just put that out there. If the client didn't have like a weird power over accountability relationship with that, right? Like from before. But sometimes how you'll reward yourself when you're done. And then sometimes if it's been like a couple of sessions of no accountability, sometimes one of the things is to invite your client just to not do it, to let it go, to take a break from the commitment. That doesn't mean that you won't come back to it, but sometimes it's like you just kind of, you need a break, get lax about it. Yeah, Mindy, somebody, I think it was Focus, but I don't remember, but somebody on the Q&A call yesterday mentioned an app, a free app where you could have an accountability partner. I think it was Focus Buddy. I'll find out though, because I think it would be good to put in the resource sheets for this class. Focusmate.com. Thanks, Rana and Kim. Okay, we have just a few minutes left. I'll give you homework, and then I'd love to hear a couple of shares and takeaways or cues before we wrap. I want to invite you to design an accountability plan for yourself on something for this next week or two and execute it. So like, what's a goal that you would like to hold yourself accountable on? Can you design a plan for yourself? And it might just be a blueprint, right? Or something else. Like, think about, do I need reminders? Do I need alarms? Do I, all the things we looked at today, do I need to ask someone, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In your client calls, wherever it's needed to tighten up some pieces that we looked at today, work on that, experiment on that. And it's hard to manufacture in partner sessions, but pay certain attention once you strategize action steps with your partners, whatever your next session is, around accountability, and see if you can, you know, if you're using some of these structures. All right, what are you taking from our call today? And or what questions do you have, Nihal?
Hi, I'm in big grief. This has brought up so much for me. It's been a little hard to stay totally present, but I'm grateful. I can see that growing up, my accountability was completely my parents manipulating my people pleaser. And I'm suddenly in a pool of not knowing who I am. So it's charged. And it helps me see why showing up and creating a power over dynamic in coaching sessions may be something I might have slipped into without realizing it. And it's just really earth shaking for me. So I'm really grateful for this time. I had a question way at the beginning.
Before you go to the question, is it okay for me to, let's take a moment. So as you've probably heard me say before, I don't want you to be uncomfortable, but I'm also happy that the discomfort is coming up because there's so much gold here for you. I know that you know this, but it feels important to say, please don't beat yourself up.
Yeah, this is really good.
Yeah, and a question that I have for you is, knowing and seeing everything that you see right now, what does your adult self want to tell your little girl?
It just feels like a huge opportunity. You know, I feel like there's, it's so, for all the dissociation I did as a child, I feel like sometimes I couldn't get anything out of the perfection exercises. I just couldn't even get in there. And this is like such an entryway, because I know that my mom wanted me to be a perfect little girl from the day I was born. And I know it's so thick and deep. And it just gives me that image of like the Wizard of Oz, when they cut a person open and it's a vegetable inside. You know, that's what I feel like in terms of like navigating that inner perfectionist. So this feels like a huge opening. It's like suddenly I have a door into the mountain inside myself. So I'm super grateful. Yeah, I don't feel any sadness or loss about like, this is an opportunity. I'm psyched. I just have a lot of grief to tend now.
So happy to hear it. What was your question?
Way at the beginning, when you were, I tried to take a note, but now I'm kind of discombobulated. You had mentioned perfectionism right at the beginning, like the coach's role in client accountability, I think, and how that showed up. And I couldn't quite catch it, and I felt like it was relevant for what I'm experiencing.
Did I mention perfectionism?
People pleaser. It was people pleaser.
Yeah, I'm trying to think about specifically which part, when I was talking about the role.
I got you.
Okay.
Nihal. And actually, Nihal, if you want to, I'll pop my email in the thing and I can type up whatever afterwards, but the gist of it, actually, I can't do it fast. So I'll just pop my email in and then I'll email you afterwards.
And I appreciate it. I can always watch.
You can email me, but yeah, no, cause it resonated with me too. Cause I have not the same history as you, but some of the same, like some elements of that. So I got you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Simona. Mindy.
Thanks. So it may seem like a silly question, but I'm going to ask it. Is there a word other than accountability that we can use? Because I have to tell you, I'm like, that word's pissing me off.
I love it.
So like, what else, what other word?
I'm going to ask you.
I don't know. I'm trying to think of like another word to use. I don't know if
you used responsibility.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe that's
ownership. A word to use. So ownership.
Ownership. Maybe that's it. Ownership. It doesn't feel so charged.
What would you like to take ownership on over this next week?
I like that. Thank you. I don't know why. It was just bugging me, and I thought
Kim is saying commitment. Yeah. Kim is saying willingness.
I like that.
Yeah. Agreement. Yeah.
It helps. Good. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't use accountable if that's if it has too much in there for you.
Thank you.
All right, everyone, thank you so much for your presence and your energy today. I told you accountability can be sexy. Let me know how it goes. I'm going to be out of town. My husband and I are being brave and taking our children to Orlando for the rest of the week. So wish me luck. I'll be offline until Sunday, but then I'll be around. Let me know what you need. Have a wonderful week. Bye.
Thank you. Wonderful class, as always.
You're so welcome.